Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about COVID, cybersecurity, and cannabis, how it all intersects. And we are joined by the host of the Cannabis Economy podcast, Mr. Seth Adler. Seth, thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Seth, how are you doing? Where are you located? And, how are you holding up in these coronavirus times?
Yeah, thankfully, safe and sound. Family's all safe and sound. Just being smart and, trying to avoid, people. I hope everybody there is safe and sound. Yeah?
Yes, Seth. We are well out here in Colorado, and we've discussed and appreciated what's going on around us. And to your point, everybody's happy and healthy and staying at home. And, it begs the question of when will things resume some semblance of normality, which I don't think we can put a specific date on. But what are your thoughts in that regard?
Well, I'm one of those people that thinks we are in a new normal, and there is no resumption. I think that these are the first days of the next, and whatever we had before is yesterday.
Well, and that brings us to an interesting point, because if this is the new normal, what we have seen, we've seen Saturday Night Live, we've seen everything go digital. Everybody's on Zoom conferences. I imagine the bandwidth that everybody's using is a much greater than it was previously. Maybe not. But that brings us to this issue of cybersecurity, which I know you have some interesting thoughts on and would love to hear them here.
Yeah, well, I edit a website called the Cybersecurity Hub. So absolutely, I just work in artificial intelligence as well. When I'm not thinking and talking about cannabis. And really, this is a field day opportunity with all sorts of new technology, all sorts of new systems being used for, real work. This is a rough time if you're a CISO, right? A Chief Information Security Officer, because there's so much that being used that you don't want being used. That's at least my humble take on that.
Well, Seth, it wasn't that long ago that I recall walking down a hallway in the Hilton Hotel off Millennium Park in Chicago to meet some guy named Seth and to do a podcast. And that was, I was talking to Eric, that was the first podcast that I had ever done. And I walk into this room and there's this handsome guy sitting there with speakers on or headphones on. And I remember then very well. What do you think about the industry and how far we've come as an industry and just how you've been able to document it against the backdrop of where we are today with publicly traded companies, coronavirus affecting the industry, marijuana as an essential product, hemp, acreage off the charts. What is your perspective upon reflection of where we've come?
There is so much to say. There's so much to unpack there. I'll try to do it justice. Number one, I also remember that day. That's the first time I saw the Bob Hoban smile. And if you, the listener, have never seen it for yourself in real life, that's the thing to look forward to post-quarantine, is the Bob Hoban smile in person. Anyway, and I'm only partly kidding there. But when you and I sat down, what would that have been? Was that like 2015, 2016, something like that?
2015, so I believe, yes.
Yeah, so that's real early days. That's when, you had to have, a heavy set of cojones to be in the cannabis industry like you were at the time, right? Because I'm only an anthropologist. I'm only kind of seeing what's out there. But, it was very early days. and you know, we didn't have the State Banking Act passed in the House and not in the Senate like we do now. These halcyon days with federal legislation on the books. But in all seriousness, there were raids still going on in California, and it was very, very early. Flash forward to, you mentioned, you know, these big, you know, public companies. All of us then, you know, thought that public companies were very far away, and we definitely figured, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, that the first public companies were not going to be agriculture companies. They weren't going to be plant-touching companies. It was going to be, you know, all the ancillary companies were going to be the first ones that were the truly big, you know, publicly traded companies. Did you think differently, or was that just me and a bunch of other people?
No, I mean, I'm surprised that is how it turned out, because the bet was the complete opposite. But going back to this theme of sort of what's happened over time is that you just pushed and you pushed and you pushed and you found this exception and you nudged this along. And then all of a sudden this distinction of plant touching versus ancillary became less and less prevalent. Now, it's still a cornerstone for how investors make their decisions and certainly how different folks look at the industry from different lenses. But it is remarkable that we're sitting here and those same companies you mentioned on the public exchanges in Canada are public, you know, cross-listed here in the United States. It's sure. Remarkable, man. It's remarkable. But
it is. And then what's even more is that while we're federally illegal, and I know 0.3% and below, thank Bob Hoban and everybody else that hemp is legal across the land. Not that we have rules for that, but it's at least, you know, we've got some legislation. We went from being federally illegal, and still are, to essential overnight here in, you know, in this time of coronavirus. And that's not surprising to me as somebody that understands the plant. That probably is the most surprising thing that has happened yet. I wonder if you agree or disagree, Bob.
Well, what how expedited this has become accepted, and what we were just talking about was this concept of all of a sudden you've got this economic opportunity, this fact that the plant has been deemed essential, at least in certain respects commercially, and then you've got hemp farmers about to drop down seeds all over North America. There is tremendous, tremendous opportunity for this industry to really take a step forward and say, hey, it sounds hokey, but we were here when you needed us, and we've always been here when you needed us. And oh, by the way, my cousin over here is going to make, you know, produce seeds and protein and all these other great things that are going to fuel. I see this as a remarkable time for this industry to assert itself in a very positive way. It doesn't mean it's all rosy, but it is an opportunity, because, you know, if you look at history, and I'm not sold on this, but if you look at history as we came out of the Great Depression, you know, and the end of alcohol prohibition seen as an economic driver, if you look at how cannabis has been impacted by public health events, if you look at the AIDS epidemic and how that sort of prompted regulation and legalization of medical forms of marijuana, particularly in California. So it came out of a public health scenario. So I think this plan is up for the challenge. It's just, can we get over the hump? Can we get out of our own way sometimes?
Well, I think that can we get out of our own way is a huge question. But I do think post-quarantine, what we might see, at least from some people, is kind of a return to local, a return to the earth, and a return to health and wellness. And those are all cannabis subjects right there. You know, so I do agree that this is a moment in particular that's real good for cannabis, because it takes a lot of boxes of where things, you know, might be going. Yeah, sure, we're all digital. You know, that's kind of during the day. But when you look at, you know, however you're buying groceries, it's not the bagged bread that's hard to find. It's the flour. People are making bread for the first time in a long time. you know, as opposed to buying bread. People are caring about what's going into their bodies. And again, that ticks all the boxes towards cannabis.
I have a thought that was spurred by talking about federal legalization just for a moment. And Seth, I think who better to address something like this than an anthropologist? But, you know, is there an...
Unlicensed.
Is there... He plays one on the ridge.
Is there an advantage to, you know, cannabis not being legalized at the federal level and kind of using states as experiments for success, if you will? And when you look at Canada, when you look at the way that they legalized cannabis and didn't really make that hard distinction between marijuana and hemp, psychoactive and non-psychoactive, you know, are there some advantages? You know, is it good that we have developed this market in Colorado and then other states have followed suit, faced some challenges for sure, and we've seen some patterns emerge relating to those challenges, but does it mean that when federal legalization comes, we will be more informed? We can take the learnings and knowledge that we've seen at the state level. Now, I'm going to pair it with one other thing, which is that, you know, to your point, we have legal hemp, but, you know, you didn't really see USDA lean really hard on Colorado. Maybe they did, and it just didn't come through in the IFR. But you didn't necessarily see the reliance on that state knowledge that had been gained through hemp production. So there's a lot there, but I'll let you run with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I think you're saying is the laboratories of democracy, these great states of the United States of America, are doing their job as far as kind of showing us what we can do and how we can do it. I think, you know, Bob and I have talked about this in the past, that we don't, you know, I don't know why we seem to want to reinvent the wheel every time. We did a pretty good job in Colorado to begin with, and then we kind of started to try to reinvent the wheel. Some of that stuff, of course, has been good with the social justice and, you know, making sure that communities that have been disproportionately affected by the war on drugs are served better moving forward with legal cannabis. So sure, yeah, we've made some improvements. But it's been a little messy here along the way. But I think it would have been even messier if we went from, you know, top down. But I don't know if there's an example of going top down. Bob, is there? I mean, let's lean on you being a lawyer here. Is there precedent for that type of thing, or is this usually how we do it?
Well, I think that this is usually how we do it. I don't think we like to go out and tackle something head on from a policy change perspective. It's just not American. We'd rather do something that has an indirect effect, which is our primary effect, our primary objective. I think that's American politics. And that's what's impacted the development of the policy in this industry, for sure.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I think it's positive times, but Bob, I'll go back to what you said. If we can get out of our own way. And so, you know, this is where I ask you, if you don't mind, I know it's your show, but may I ask you the question of what can you say, what can we say to your colleagues about, all right, listen, we got, you know, almost a new starting line here. Let's stop doing X and start doing more of Y. You know, what would you say there?
No, that's a great question, and it's more of, it's just what we've always been saying, is just, it's about professionalization and embracing change and understanding that, to your point a moment ago, that there is a pattern for this. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We need to voluntarily adopt existing regulations and standards across the board for consumer health and safety protection, so forth and so on, when you're making products, and that this industry does not need to go out, you know, and say, tax the heck out of us to allow us to be in existence, but understanding how to align with people outside of cannabis and to just take this seriously. This is a great responsibility to get this done correctly, because it's helping so many people in so many different ways, and they're developing in so many different ways around the world, you know?
Yeah. I think that intersectionality piece, you know, kind of pulling other people in and understanding what their issues are and kind of meeting them where they are. I think that's the kind of now more than ever type of thing, because we have obviously exited the cannabis is sexy portion of this story. You know what I mean? As far as investment and otherwise. And it's time to get down to even more work, which you old school guys, I'm sure, are kind of rolling your eyes a little bit because it's been hard work along, you know, the whole way. But, yeah, I think we're saying the same thing here, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And ultimately, you know, we were only able to pick it up after so many people before us set the table for such opportunities and hard work. But this industry is going to move in a bunch of different directions. But the thing is that it is here to stay. And as governments evaluate how to treat this as an industry, and as we see even in recent days that the use of cannabis is being seriously and closely examined as a possible treatment towards coronavirus symptoms. For example, we heard about a particular National Institute of Health going out and looking at how cannabinoids could be used to prevent the inflammation of the lungs and what I believe is called fibrosis. That's one of the grave impacts of this thing, is it makes your lungs sort of, stop being able to function in those particular parts of your body. And they believe cannabis can prevent that or slow that down from occurring. And they threw together a crack team, quite literally, the U.S. government did, to evaluate this right now in real time. Now, it's an evolving story, so we don't know where it's going to go yet. But it's if these two things are happening at the same time and the science supports it, that is what gets us over the hump. Because remember, to our point a minute ago, the industry has always resisted working with outsiders because it's always been maligned. It's always been treated as, even as a law firm. You know, you talked to a cannabis law firm 5 years ago, or another law firm 5 years ago, you're a pot firm, they wouldn't talk to you. It was taboo. But that whole notion has changed and changed dramatically. So you had to stop as an industry defending yourself from your position of contact and became a position where now let's go out and interact and work with these people and try to integrate into mainstream business. And that's not something that every cannabis professional wants to hear.
You know, and to your point, mindset and behavior that's been trained the other way. So, you know, even the best of us have a tough time changing, when we didn't get trained, to one side, and now we've got to come back to the other side. That's tough, but this is that moment. It really is. This is that moment for kind of everything, don't you think? You know, aren't we here where, doesn't it feel like, this whole thing can bring about a whole brand new reality? You see the pictures coming out of China and over Italy and over the U.S. of the air pollution, just kind of disappearing overnight. The oil's worth less than zero. I mean, this is a new day.
Well, I love the idea of this new chapter, and specifically looking at the new chapter of cannabis. There are so many technologies out there. There are so many things that cannabis hasn't touched yet. I'm looking, at your background, Seth. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about blockchain. You know, this is something people talk about, maybe particularly in regards to hemp and when we look at supply chains. But I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about how we can digitize the future of cannabis, how we can introduce some of these new technologies like blockchain into the cannabis supply chain.
Yeah, so I'm no expert. I have spoken to experts, and it seems to me like this is, an opportunity. But I think for the cannabis industry, to Bob's point earlier of just trying to kind of put one foot in front of the other and be a regular industry, you got to use it like maybe J.P. Morgan Chase is looking at blockchain and not look at a digital currency. Now, having said that, societally, we got, 17, 21 million people that are unemployed in 3-4 weeks. So I still see that there might be a digital currency moment here, in tandem with coronavirus. But I think that as far as cannabis is concerned, we got to look at everything. We got to be as innovative as possible. Blockchain's part of that, but we got to talk to other experts that can tell you how.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the time to do it, though. It does seem like, this is an opportunity. And that's something we've tried to really hone in on here on the HOBA Minute, that find the silver lining, find how you can take advantage, write your own Corona story, as Donnie Emmy put it. Interested in just, what do you look at as the silver linings here? What are you kind of excited about in this future?
Sure. Well, there's that saying, never waste a downturn, right? But I mentioned it. I mean, look at what we're saving the planet, by mistake. We're talking about, talking with my other drug policy friends about decarceration. We're doing a whole SSDP, the Sensible 2020 event, and decarceration is a huge topic within that group. And it's happening. This is not something that people thought about. But it's happening because if not, the governors get sued. Governor Cuomo here in New York, he can tell you about it because his father got sued. My sister wrote an article about it. And his father lost that lawsuit. Bob, you might know about that. You got to keep the inmates safe, so to speak.
How about that Cuomo, though? He's done a heck of a job, it seems like.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah. I mean, when you act and provide leadership in a moment of duress, people are going to take notice and people are going to appreciate it. Now, having said that, where were we as far as preparation? Easy for me to say, but I'm not the governor, nor was I a governor's son. but no, in the moment, there's been great work done, and it's a terrible, horrible situation with a lot of death and a lot of sickness. But it does seem like we may be flattening the curve. We'll see. We'll see if there's a, second wave or whatever they're talking about. But I mean, I do, just to answer the question, I think that everything needs to be looked at. Everything that we were doing, all any, policy that was in place, any way of doing business, any science that we were looking at, and we got to look at it with a new lens. So I do see what you're talking about as far as the silver lining. I think there's silver linings all over the place.
Well, if I had my way, we would make sure that we keep thinking about things in a positive light, despite everything that's going on around us, because that's really where the opportunity lies. But I've got an opportunity here.
I just want to interrupt you, Bob, because Grateful Dead fans know that you just made a record. You just said, if I had my way, I didn't want that to go on.
Well,
anyway,
no. Listen, the eyes of the world are upon us, so we have to.
There we go.
So now
at the moment, unfortunately, we're going to hell in a bucket, but at least we're going.
Yeah, right? Exactly right. But that is interesting as we sort of tie up that issue of cryptocurrency and potential digital currency development. It does seem like there will be an opportunity there. But to your point, it just goes to the whole theme about the evolution of the industry. If you're going to behave like an industry, if you're going to act like you belong instead of stop defending yourself and projecting accordingly, then things will progress. And it doesn't have to be one way or the other, but that's what needs to take place in the rest of 2020. People just need to step up and do what they have to do. And guess what? We get led by the hemp farmers now, because we get to see what they're doing in the next 4 to 8 weeks. And that's going to be very telling.
Now, when do we get a decorticator on every corner? That's my question to you, Bob.
Believe it or not, they sell a decorticator that's the size of, one of those box air conditioners that you put on a stool and you can roll it around. I don't know how good it is, but it is technically possible. But no, that's what we were talking about. This was the evolution of the industry shifting away from single-purpose CBD crops more towards whole-purpose or industrial-style crops that service multiple verticals versus just one. And understanding that once we've sorted that out and farmers can do things reliably and consistently, then the infrastructure needs to step up. And that is what's going to give the farmers certainty and which will create the demand, which is supported by need and science on the corporate and the purchaser side. It just hasn't been scaled up reliably yet.
That's it. But this is that moment, is it not? I mean, we can make anything that you can think of with hemp. I don't have to tell you that. This is when to build that infrastructure. Never miss the opportunity in a downturn. I think that might be the biggest one.
Absolutely. And, we'll keep our ears to the ground on that one because with this being the biggest year for hemp growth in the United States, the most acreage ever being devoted to hemp, at least in contemporary history, you're the anthropologist here, so I don't want to make sure I'm saying anything incorrect. It'll be very interesting to see where all of that raw material goes after harvest. I will say one thing, Seth, because you made a great point earlier. It's a lot easier to maintain positivity and stay in good spirits when you are in the proximity of that Bob Hope and smile, which we are lucky enough to be. So that's an important note.
Seth, it reminds me of that Seinfeld episode with The Wiz. Do you know that one where, well, the Wiz had this smile, and when he smiled, his teeth glistened. Anyway, go back and watch it.
There you have it.
Oh, Seth, well, we thank you so much for taking your time to come and be with us on the Hoban Minute, sharing all of your insights, and we can't wait to have you again.
Appreciate it. Absolutely. Stay safe, guys, and listen, wash your hands.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.